Welcome to Straight Talk on Health with Dr. Vincent Medici. Knowing that ultimately it's God who does the healing, Dr. Medici acts as the maestro, orchestrating a person's health through right timing and right therapies, using traditional, natural, alternative, and spiritual practices. Dr. Medici says it's time for people to wake up to their innate potential to heal and to be given a doctor who can orchestrate that healing. Dr. Medici is currently working toward his PhD in biochemistry at Long Beach University, with additional study in acupuncture, kinesiology, and quantum medicine. He's the curriculum director of the Santa Monica Shiatsu School. And now, here's Dr. Medici.
Good morning. I got a big one for you guys today. So let's get right to it on this 4th of July, 5th of July. Happy 4th, happy 5th. Ben Franklin, the name comes to mind, a Renaissance man. Thomas Jefferson, another Renaissance man, the name comes to mind. Alexander Hamilton, no shortage of IQ points there. Patrick Henry, George Washington. What did they all have in common? The answer is none of them were on Prozac. The answer is they lived in a time when Renaissance men, particularly Franklin and Jefferson, knew how to draw an intelligence from above, a special kind of intelligence, the kind of intelligence that's shrinking on the internet. We invented Prozac to solve the depression, the creative block, not just for the artist, but for the working man, the guy that got up in the morning and felt his dream would never come true. And so he became depressed. And more depressed and more depressed. Whoever you are, whatever your vice is, understand that underneath it is blocked creative force. We celebrate those men today. Think of who you are, where you are, where you've come from, how we've celebrated this country. And think of stuffing Prozac down the minds of the best Americans in the name of trying to remedy that pain that comes from blocked creative energy. We would have had no nation. In the 1930s, Huxley, get to the website, zoestraighttalk.cc. Huxley, Aldous Huxley's Brave New World. Take a look at picture number 14. If you're new to the show, I am Dr. Vincent Medici. Get to my website, straighttalk.cc. That's not .com.cc. If you're listening on the road today, simply listen and then get home and do that. It's the early 30s, the late 20s. Huxley, Aldous Huxley, Brave New World. It talks about a time in 1928 when we barely had the car and the telephone. 1928, when he talks about the drug Soma. Look at picture 17, Brave New World, delicious Soma, just pop it in and it all gets better. We're there. Huxley's prophetic work has come true. Statements abound. Statistically speaking, over the next 20, 30 years, 1 out of 4 to 1 out of 3 Americans will live on an antidepressant. That means something. As always, you know my game. I want to take that information, turn it upside down, and show you that your body's making its own Prozac. We've got some very interesting correlations today. But first, I want to strengthen the argument. I want you to understand what Prozac is all about, its history, where it comes from, what it means. Let's take a look at picture number 7, serotonin. Picture number 7, serotonin is a neurotransmitter. It's a chemical secreted by the ends of your nerves. In other words, in between the gaps, in between the long nerve cell. What nerve cell? The nerve cells in your intestinal tract, the nerve cells in your brain. Look at picture number 3. There's a neuron, gazillions of them throughout the human body, multi-trillion gazillions, 10 to the 2,000th power. Picture number two. Yeah, you got to move with those pictures today so we get it all in. Picture number two. Look at that masterpiece of a picture inside the human brain. Those are neurons, individual neurons, and those ropes, those tentacles, are the axons. Axons transmitting the nerve pulses. So go back to picture number three. Look at those axons. And look at the axon terminal, picture three, upper left-hand corner. The red is the conducting fiber, the axon itself, coated in fat, fat you need, fat hopefully you're not deficient in, fat hopefully you have enough cholesterol to make, enough essential fatty acids, fat that hopefully isn't the hydrogenated trans fatty garbage fat. It's the good fat. At the end of that red are those axon terminals. Those transmitters, they're just bumping along these chemicals that are made, lots of chemicals. Epinephrine, norepinephrine, acetylcholine. In this case, serotonin. That's the one we're going to focus on today, serotonin. But we could be talking about dopamine too. Serotonin, that's the happy one. It makes you happy. When you eat a nice big carb meal at night, when you've got those munchy feelings in the evening, when you're alone, when things aren't going well, when you're high anxiety and you just want to feel comfort, comfort food. Our gastrointestinal tract, we'll get into this later, secretes 90% of all the serotonin that's made each day. 90% of all the serotonin. It's the happy chemical. Just think of satiety after chocolate chip cookies and a fudge brownie. Think of that momentary feeling before your glucose spikes to 5,000 and you begin to feel sick or you throw up because you can't digest the fat. But in that first 10 minutes, 20 minutes, 30 minutes, or if you do it intelligently and just take a little bit, think of that satiety that comes. That's serotonin. Something really interesting, blockbuster interesting. As interesting as stem cells, as interesting as the pineal gland, the ventricular system of the brain. All these interesting odysseys throughout the human body. I encourage you to get to the website if you haven't before and study them. It's where health really lives, not the nonsense. Serotonin is the satiety chemical. Your brain makes it. Okay, your brain makes it. Let's study the brain making it. Let's go to picture number one. Now, if you press control plus, the picture will get bigger. If you take both fingers and you put it in the trackpad there, if you've got that kind of thing and you're not using a mouse, if you're using a PC, just spread your fingers and that picture will enlarge. Don't sit there lamenting the fact that you can't see the picture. It's just a couple of clicks. Control plus. Or put two fingers in the trackpad and spread them. There you go. There is the end of the axon. Serotonin is normally produced at the end of that, and it crosses over. Those little squares in between those two nerve structures, the axon and the dendrite. Those little squares, the black squares, that's serotonin. It's normally being secreted. And then something appears to eat it. So you make this nice chemical, and then something appears to eat it. Go to picture number four. There's picture number four. And it's showing you serotonin is produced. It's released at the end of the axon in the brain. In the gut, but we're talking about the brain now. Because serotonin's got something to do with depression. And depression's got something to do with Prozac. And Prozac's got something to do with a bunch of other things. So this serotonin is secreted at the end of the axon, those little black squares. And an enzyme in red in this picture, picture number four, monoamine oxidase, MAOs, MAOs. Monoamine oxidases are secreted to eat the serotonin. Now, how fast does MAO, does the monoamine oxidase enzyme, eat the serotonin? As fast as it needs to. You don't want to produce too much serotonin. You don't want to leave the serotonin there too long. You want to regulate it. Remember, the electrical rhythm is being regulated by the concentration and frequency and duration of the neurotransmitter, how much is produced and how long it's there. It's basic neurophysiology, but to the guts of it, minus all the baloney. Use the pumping magnetic field regulated chemically and electrical. Chemically by what? Your neurotransmitters. They want to tell you you are your neurotransmitters. They want to tell you you're at the mercy of your neurotransmitter production. This is nonsense. The argument has been flipped upside down. Once you flip the argument, you become enslaved. That was Huxley's point. If you are nothing more than under the control, the subjugation, the slavery of your brain chemicals, and science, of course, supports this, then you are simply at the mercy of your chemistry. And, of course, the government and science have a solution, the mind-altering drugs. This is what Huxley was saying. This is what Prozac inadvertently was about. If you look at the guy that invented that is credited largely with discovering how the tricyclic amines work, Prozac being a very specific type of them. If you look at these guys, they didn't really intend that to happen. It really wasn't the intention of Julius Axelrod back in the 30s or whenever, PhD, Julius Axelrod from East Coast. It wasn't his intention to create the beast. It was inadvertent. They didn't wake up one morning and say, let's think of how to destroy the world. But you got to understand the way it works. Just because you're a credentialed scientist doesn't mean you're like a baby in a crib playing with a toy and blowing off the top of your head accidentally. So the birth of these things goes way back. Way back we learned that monoamine oxidase could eat up the neurotransmitter, serotonin. And we knew serotonin had something to do with depression or that satiety feeling that didn't make us feel depressed. It was the opposite of depressed. And we knew that people got really depressed. Manic depressives. I mean bad depression. Metchnikoff was suicidally depressed after he lost his wife. People go through trauma and understandably get depressed. So we were studying this years ago, 100 years ago. And we realized that we could make a group of drugs called tricyclic antidepressants, tricyclic amines. And what they would do is block the reuptake of serotonin and many other chemicals. So let's talk about secretion and uptake. So look at this picture number 4. Look where those circular green things are. And where it says neurotransmitter transporter or reuptake site. What it means is after we secrete the serotonin, the divine plan dictates chemically, in a very sophisticated way, a certain amount of reuptake. It's kind of like you over-secrete and then reuptake. So those reuptake mechanisms are important. And that has a great deal to do with monoamine oxidase. Suppose you could block monoamine uptake. Suppose you could make a monoamine oxidase inhibitor. You could block the reuptake, which meant then that you would leave the neurotransmitter in the synapse a longer period of time. And if, in fact, you were the person that didn't secrete enough, or if we assume you didn't secrete enough, or if we just speculated on it and then did something about it and found that your mood would lift, if any of these things became true, well, then we could make a darn good case for a drug. Thus, the tricyclic antidepressants. And that was the mechanism, in a nutshell. Lots more complicated, obviously. Great minds gave much to understanding what I just said in 5 minutes. So that was the idea. Could we actually make the SSRI, selective serotonin uptake drugs? So we thought we had it figured out. So Prozac came out in the late 80s, early 90s, and saved the day. Before that, we had the tricyclic antidepressants. Before that, the tricyclic antidepressants, a larger group, were a problem because they just didn't block the uptake of serotonin. They blocked the uptake of epinephrine and lots of other things. In other words, they were too broad range. The tricyclic antidepressants, which came out before Prozac, kept psychiatry and mind-altering drugs in the dark ages. Give you a perspective on that. Go to my article. Go to the top of the page. I want you to get the history of this. The history of science is so fascinating because it teaches you where the lies are. It gives you that perspective that allows you to see the new lies. We're lied to every day. Not necessarily intentionally, maybe to some extent, not necessarily. The natural biasness of the human mind is to lie. So check this out. Click to view the few article on Prozac SSRI side effects. Click that article on. That should be pretty easy to do. SSRI antidepressant meds, adverse effects and tolerability. We're going to go after this for a few minutes together, and then I'll get off this page. But you got to catch the history here. Side effects of antidepressants can be predicted by receptor selectivity and site of action. Although the selective serotonin reuptake inhibitors, there you are, the SSRIs, the selective serotonin reuptake. Why selective serotonin? Because it's only blocking the reuptake of serotonin. It's selecting serotonin. It's not selecting dopamine. It's not selecting epinephrine. Now, before that, what we had was tricyclic antidepressants. On that same first page, go to the opposite side. You'll see that paragraph in the early 1950s. If you're new to the show, I'm Dr. Vincent Medici. This is straighttalk.cc. Get to the website. We're broadcasting live on KBRIGHT 740 AM. But you've got to get to the website to really get this. Click that article on if you can. First page. SSRI antidepressant meds, the opposite. In the early 1950s, mood-elevating effects of the monoamine oxidase inhibitors were discovered serendipitously. Do you know that one of the synonyms for science is serendipity? Which means half the time scientists just stumble on it. They trip over it. It's God's payoff for working hard. You just fall over it. The TCAs, the tricyclic antidepressants, were discovered by accident, basically. And somebody recognized they were worth something and led to early theories relating to brain chemistry and mood. You've got to understand the deep significance of this. Huxley is watching Brave New World begin to evolve, and he's saying, I guarantee you, it may be 1930, but give it to 1990, give it 60 years later, give it 70, give it 80 years later, and it's going to be soma. We're going to convince you. How many psychologists have you been to? Psychologists, not even psychiatrists, that are telling you your moods are simply about an altered brain chemistry and this pill can fix it. How many psychologists, not just psychiatrists? The psychologists were supposed to do psychotherapy. The psychiatrists talked to Freud, Jung, Reich. They're on my website. They wouldn't come down the pipe at psychoanalytic theory to tell you to take Prozac. They came down the pipe to tell you to look into your past and figure it out. Shake it loose. Grow up. Get over your mommy and daddy temper tantrums. And what are we spawning now? A bunch of narrow-faced, computer-savvy, corporate clones who've got to drop a pill to get through the day. Okay, fine. Yes. There is a valid use for these things. People get really hurt. We don't need to get into it. They get suicidal for very good reasons. God bless them. And I'm glad we have these drugs. I truly am. I love the science. But it starts to become our paradigm. This is what Huxley was saying in the 20s and 30s. He was saying this. He could see it coming. Freud always said it. The poets are always ahead of the shrinks and the scientists. And they are. See, to be a poet, well, Huxley wasn't quite a poet, but I'll stretch it. To be a poet is to smell the flower. To be a scientist is to smell the flower and say, I want to make a better flower. I want to mass produce these flowers. I want to get rich on these flowers. I want to win the Nobel Prize because of these flowers. Scientists, industrialists, politicians devote a great deal of their time outside of the experience of smelling the flower. You see, there's a payoff for both. The poet can't extend the smell or improve the flower. But the industrialist, the scientist, well, he never really smells the flower. It's yin and yang, is it not? Point being, Huxley was smelling the roses and seeing what was going to happen. And it has. So there we go. 20s, 30s. By the 50s, we've discovered the TCAs, tricyclic antidepressants. Antidepressants. Now, below that, the TCAs, the tricyclic antidepressants, non-selectively. So let's remember, selective serotonin reuptake inhibitors. We're just selecting serotonin. But the TCAs non-selectively inhibit serotonin, norepinephrine, dopamine. Although they are effective in treating depression, their effects on other receptor systems, including the histaminic, cholinergic, adrenergic, and postsynaptic serotonin, unrelated to depression, led to the development of significant, often intolerable, adverse effects. So the TCAs were developed serendipitously. It was noted that they could take you out of depression, but their side effects weren't worth it. I wouldn't be doing this show if we ended there, but we discovered, what is it, fluoxetine? That's the real name for serotonin? For Prozac? We developed Prozac et al. There's other ones. Prozacs and their analogs. Go to the next page. So on the bottom of that page, it says next page. Just click that arrow. And then we'll leave this. And what it says effectively is that in essence, the search for a safer magic bullet had become, with the goal of treating depression with an efficacious agent that had fewer side effects. In the 1970s, a second generation of antidepressants were developed. And it goes on to talk about this for a moment. In 1988, important step, the first SSRI, selective serotonin reuptake inhibitor, fluoxetine, was introduced. And we were all happy. And I remember Time magazine, and so do you. So do you. Candace Pert, remember that book, Molecules of Emotion? She passed away, Candace Pert. Molecules of Emotion. It was another great work telling us that your mood today, whether you're happy or depressed, whether your dream can come true in your mind or whether it can't, whether you can work out the problems in your relationship, work out the problems with your boss, work out the problems in your life, or whether you are doomed, whether you've been betrayed by God or God loves you. Candace Pert said, this research said, simply a matter of these chemicals. Now, there was an implication there. That implication was dangerous. It was nonsense. I'll argue it was, well, functionally demonic, but not intentionally for many. These are just scientists. Remember, scientists aren't paid to be theologians or philosophers. They're paid to be scientists. They report the data. Well, you can only make that excuse so far, perhaps. But for the most part, it's not like these guys are sitting there like the Antichrist. We developed the atom bomb. Was that the Antichrist? Was that the devil? What do you think when you sit with these guys? You talk to them. You realize that they're passionate about what they've invented. Julius Axelrod, look that name up. Blew his eye off accidentally with a bottle of ammonia in a lab in the 20s or something. Took the Nobel Prize, bawled out President Nixon for not sending more money to the NIH. These are not bad people. In the ethers is the devil. In the ethers. In our misconceptions. In our poorly illuminated perspectives. Our low information perspectives. So at the bottom of this page, go to the bottom left-hand corner, click next. Compared with the tricyclic antidepressants, SSRIs were initially considered almost free of side effects. And then they go on to say how, really, they didn't have any side effects. And then it goes on to say that although in the original placebo-controlled clinical trials in depressed patients, sexual dysfunction was reported in 1.9% of trial participants. And let me tell you how kinky this stuff is. First of all, to get a drug passed, to get a drug through is a big deal. Yeah, knock the FDA and they're the devil and the rest of it. Let's get off that. It's not really an intelligent statement on a certain level. Let's understand that it takes millions and billions of dollars to get a drug through. You've heard that. And let's understand that what we call a side effect when a drug is new can't be determined. The acute side effect that could kill you is usually determined. Be glad you have an FDA in this respect. But the long-term one, forget it. It's not cost-effective. You'll never have a drug. The drug that saves your life when you want to slit your wrists and jump out a third, fourth, fifth-story window because you've been traumatized, that drug will never get FDA approval if you wait long enough for side effects to expose themselves. There's a reality there that the holistic people have to look at. But this is a little interesting twist. Sexual dysfunction was reported in 1.9% of the trial participants. However, post-marketing clinical trials reported 75%. How do you go from 1.9% to 75%? It's very simple. No guy, perhaps no female, wants to tell anybody about their sexual dysfunction. And when you're depressed, how often and how much sex function do you have anyway? So side effects are weird. Very interesting, don't you think? If you think what you can draw out of articles. At any rate, the article goes on to show it's loaded with side effects. I don't need to tell you that. These things stink on ice. But if you don't have a choice, you don't have a choice. Okay, fine. Do you have a choice? Well, we had one choice. Look at picture number 9. If you're new to the show, I'm Dr. Vincent Medici. Get to my website, straighttalk.cc. Next Sunday, I'm doing another class on stem cells. We did one last Sunday. I thought it was the best we've ever done. Give us a ring if that sounds like it sparks your interest. I guarantee you there's entertainment. 714-850-1007. 714-850-1007. We've got about 3-4 spaces left. We packed out last Sunday. It was wonderful. Open your mind to this stuff. Because it'll lead you out of depression. If you really get into the inward journey, you won't be depressed. But if you're ignorant of how your machine, your organism works, how your thoughts are made, you'll stay depressed. Freud had a solution. Picture number 9. Look at him with the cigar. Jung, Carl Jung, picture 10. Your vision will become clear only when you can look into your own heart. Who looks outside dreams? Who looks outside just dreams? Who looks inside awakens. You get the point. You can't stay ignorant. You can't pop the pill. And then there was Reich. Reich that took it even a step further. And then picture number 13. Take a look at 13. The Wilhelm Reich Museum in Organon in Wrangley, Maine. Understanding that your mood, what you think of your relationship with your husband or with your wife, with your teacher, with your school, with your mother, with your father, is largely influenced by the chemicals in your brain. No, yes. Yes, by the chemicals in your brain, which are under the influence of you, of understanding that you are an electromagnetic organism capable of shifting your frequencies and your wavelengths and your amplitudes to change your perception of your reality. That is what Reich, Freud, and Jung would have told you. That is not what Prozac is telling you. That is not what your psychologist, that is not what your psychiatrist is telling you. You have to understand, too many people have drank the Kool-Aid on this. We're suffering as a result. So, solutions. Freud and Reich and Jung had solutions. Go find somebody that you can do real therapy with. Oh, those guys, they don't know anything. Unfortunately, a lot of times they don't. You got to look long and hard to find anything decent today. Why should it be any easier to find a shrink than it is an auto mechanic or a construction guy? It's not. It isn't. It never was. It never will be. The whole culture is drinking too much Kool-Aid. The mentality, whether let the government give you handouts, how dare we think we're going to draw blood over a point that needs to be made, a la the Declaration of Independence. It's politically incorrect for congressmen to stand up and tell their president, hey, president, you're lying. That's politically incorrect, Charlie Wilson, when he did it, right or wrong. Let's forget the argument. But it was incorrect for him to do so. It's incorrect to report the news, and it's incorrect to take responsibility for your emotions, for your mind. That's what Huxley was saying. Just drink the Kool-Aid. Freud, Jung, Reich, they had a different answer. Here's a few other answers. You make a list if you are depressed. Sleep deprivation. Not going to get into it. Listen to the show. Fluorescent lights. Get up there. Smash your fluorescent lights. Smash them. Okay, don't smash them. Change them out for full spectrum fluorescent bulbs. Pay for it with your own money. There you are. I can hear you grumbling because you can't. You see, and that's just it. We can't. We can't do anything except bend over. Fluorescent lights, figure it out. Turn them off. Open the windows. Turn them off. Put in your own lamp, your own lamp. Turn off the fluorescent lights. Go out and buy your own light bulbs. Full spectrum electric bulbs. The ones they use in Alaska and Scandinavia. Do that. Get the sun. Get out in the sun, the morning sun, the afternoon sun. Learn to have the sun go through your eyeballs. Dark-skinned people. Dark-skinned, the Latins. The Spanish, the Italians, the Greeks, the Middle Easterners, the Indians, the Polynesians, the African-Americans, the American Indians. I mean, everybody needs sun. But if you come, if you hail from one of these countries, and you're living in the northern latitudes, north of California, up there by San Francisco, Chicago, Wisconsin, Canada, Alaska, and you come from climates like that, and you're sitting in an office under fluorescent light, what do you think's going on? You can't, I know, there's no time to break. There's a certain point where you really have to ask yourself if you're free. There's a certain point where you have to ask yourself, are you simply just a transported slave? You are still serfs on plots. How many people say, I can't get any sun? Yeah, I'll get 10 minutes at lunch because it's all the time I have. There's a price to pay. It's called, you're going to be on Prozac for the rest of your life. Do you understand what happens after a while? Do you understand these SSRIs? We don't know what the long-term effect is. I'll tell you this. I will tell you that you will change in very fundamental ways. I'll tell you that anybody sensorially gifted that touches bodies, that understands what happens to flesh, to tissue, to response, knows that if you've been on any of these things long term, you've already changed fundamentally. So you got to think in terms of what your body already offers you, from sun to sleep. Plastic surgery scars, the cost of plastic surgery to what we call your brain chemistry, from those scars that torque the fascial planes. Addiction to caffeine. Caffeine purging, shrinking, and sucking the adrenaline out of your adrenals and leaving you without any jing, without any reserve force to get through your day. Living in a low energy, negative frequency site like that dumpy little apartment you live in. The one you don't like, the one you knew you should have moved from, the one that just didn't have the good vibes. You can't move, I know. You don't have enough money to pay your rent as it is now. How could you move? Go find a room in a wealthy neighborhood. You ever notice wealthy neighborhoods feel better? You think it's the wealth? It's not the wealth. Somewhere deep down in the midbrain of every human being is a sensor that tells them where the better land is. Usually the better land is soaked up by richer people. Right or wrong, left or right, that's the reality of it. You live in the dump, and they live in the vortex. Go live in a room in a vortex. Go pitch a tent in a vortex. Go buy your house. Make it smaller. Buy a one-room house instead of a four-bedroom house, just to ensure you that the site that you build your house on, that you build your farm on, wherever you build it, has a higher energy field. Learn to take the ventricular system of your brain and make it talk to the heavens. Fat deficiency. Are you living in electromagnetic gauss? Have you not been touched for years? Touch. Something as simple as touch. Yes, touch. If you're not being touched, if you're not feeling the bliss of touch, if you're lying alone in bed at night, if the person that's touching you makes you vomit, if the person you're lying with doesn't touch you, if touch just isn't part of the routine, go out and get touched. Pay someone to touch you. Find somebody to touch you. Gee, isn't it interesting? America's fixation on animals. Man, what people do to their animals. I'm not talking about weird stuff. I'm not talking about bestiality. I'm talking about the way they kiss them. You ever see that? People do that out in the open all the time. There's no law against it. It's funny, isn't it? The culture. To me, it's a little sick. You're licking your dog's face. Your dog is licking your face. Tons of people do it. Okay, fine. It's not sick. Looks sort of gooey to me, man. Where was that dog's tongue a few minutes ago? Think about it. You ever see them? But people do that all the time. That's considered normal. I'll tell you what it means. People don't get touched. So you buy an animal. There's more antidepressant medication in buying an animal than there is in a million drugs like Prozac. Get one of those little ones that doesn't make noise. Get a cat. Get whatever you could get legally. Get a bird. Get something. People do that all the time. Or people take the advice of their physician, of their psychologist now. You know, the shrinks have sold out because psychiatrists have sold out. The shrinks never made any money with analysis, so they love these drugs. 500 a pop. Run 10 people a day, 10 prescriptions. They can't make money on the drug. You're not allowed to make money on the drug. You can make money endorsing it as a seminar. You can become a spokesman for it and get paid on the side, but you can't make money off it. What you can do is charge $500 for 10 minutes, a little chit-chat, and you've got the drug. You name it, you got it. That and Viagra, Prozac and Viagra. Lots of people can get rich off dispensing that. The rate of excretion, the side effects of these things, they eat up the kidney. They're rough on the liver. There's a few. That's not even the point of the show. This was the setup. I've got something even more exciting. There's Julius Axelrod in the 1920s and 30s with one eye. Imagine that. You blow your eye off in a lab. You come right back to work the next week and you get down on it. He didn't take his PhD till he was in his 40s. Love that stuff. All the way up to Candace Pert's Molecules of Emotion, basically stating the body's just a bunch of chemicals. And then those sad inferences we've made that we have to be addicted to them because there's no other way. I feel depressed because I have a chemical imbalance. You've met those kind of people. They're everywhere. I'm on this because I'm chemically imbalanced, and science has shown us that. And my doctor has shown me that. Bad news. Really bad news. So there's just a couple of little things to listen to. Get on the website. Look at all the shows. Everything you do for your health is in the interest of building the endorphins. What about thinking, gee, someday I'll be off those drugs and someday I'll stretch down and palm the floor with my hands and feel bliss up in my brain. All of a sudden, my relationships won't seem so bad. All of a sudden, my job won't seem so bad. All of a sudden, my dreams might come true. All of a sudden, my future's a little brighter. All of a sudden, I can feel whether or not a food is right or wrong for me. All of a sudden, I can feel whether a prospective apartment, a prospective room for rent in an old wooden house, a prospective house I'm going to buy, a prospective mansion I'm going to buy, a prospective vacation I'm going to take and buy land. All of a sudden, I can tell a world has opened up because I bent down and touched my toes and felt some pulse of something. And you need Prozac? That's still not what this show is about. This is what this show is about. Take a look at where you make 90% of your serotonin. Click to view the few article, top of the site, on the enteric gut, Scientific American. The enteric gut, Scientific American. Just give that a moment to come on up. And there you go. And take that picture. It's written by Bornstein. And look at the first page. And what they're telling you in the first page is that the essential roles hang on, we got a little technical issue here with getting this page up. I hope you're not having it. It's crooked. So let's just take a minute here and we'll straighten that out. Yes, we will. Just one second. Yeah, you can rotate the picture counterclockwise. Okay, well, I hope you guys can fix it on yours. Alrighty, so, oh, still not there. Oh boy. How's that for clutch, huh? There we go. Okay, hope you got it now. I've got it. It's the Scientific American Journal. Think Twice, How the Gut's Second Brain Influences Mood and Well-Being. Now, this is where this whole lecture today is really going. Because what we found is that a good 80-90% of all our serotonin cells is produced in the gut. That's that same serotonin that you produce up in your brain to give you the happy feeling. Now, this is where Natasha Campbell came in. This is where she came in with this brain-gut connection. And so if you're looking at the site then, you're going to turn down to the brain-gut connection. Okay. All right, pardon me for these little interruptions here. So Natasha Campbell, if you look at the website, Natasha Campbell wrote a book. The book was entitled Gut Psychology Syndrome. The point was, and again, this is picture number 2. It didn't even get up. Natasha Campbell wrote a book, picture number 23. Okay, we're okay now. The Gut and Psychology Syndrome. What that was saying is that the nervous system that was wired into the intestines, if you look at picture number 21, that nervous system wired into the intestines was producing about 90% of your serotonin. So when we talked about depression as a matter of not enough serotonin in the brain, and then we found that the gut was producing a good 90% of the available serotonin, we had to think about that. Now, don't make a mistake here. Don't make a mistake and think that the serotonin produced in the gut goes up to the brain and gives us the creative or antidepressive pulse. Don't think that. Serotonin cannot cross the blood-brain barrier. Serotonin, once it's produced in the gut, has to be used in the gut. Now, there's arguments about what the serotonin actually does in the gut. This enteric nervous system, this second brain located in your small intestine, if you're looking at picture number 21, hopefully, produces 90% of your serotonin, but that serotonin doesn't get to your brain. But it's still the same serotonin. So if it's not used in your brain because it can't cross the barrier, what's it produced for? Well, we suspect gastric motility. We suspect this is why you have peristalsis. But there's arguments against that. But there is a perception. Thus the point of the show. There is a perception that suggests, based upon a finding, that really what's happening is the gut, because of the communication system through the vagus nerve, the gut, because of your communication system through the vagus nerve, the gut producing the serotonin, and the vagus nerve of the parasympathetic autonomic supply is sending impulses up into the brain all the time. And that communication between the gut through the vagus nerve and the brain is just as effective an antidepressant as anything coming out of the brain. The gut and the brain are one. Take a look at picture number 22. The gut-brain connection. It's all over the place. Picture 23, I just talked about the gut and psychology syndrome. Picture number 28, food, mood, and cognition. Picture number 26, here's the one. Picture 26, 80% of the vagus nerve fibers. This is huge. 80% of the vagus nerve fibers send instructions from the stomach to the brain. And that's small intestine too, make no mistake about it. 80% of the fibers coming off the main supply of your parasympathetic autonomic fibers, that electrical network that tells you and tells your brain how your organs are doing, is coming from the vagus nerve. Whereas only 20%, look at the left side, are messages coming from the vagus nerve from the brain to the stomach. So you've got only 20% going from brain to stomach and 80% going from the intestines and stomach to the brain, which basically makes your gut an antenna for the brain. Your gut's an antenna for the brain. Natural medicine has always said 80% of health is in digestion. Natural medicine has always said 80%. Well, all medicine has always pointed out 80-90% of your immune system is in the gut. Psychoneuroimmunology. Psychoneuroimmunology, immuno. 90% of the immune system in the gut. Psychoneuro, that the way you see your world is related to the network of nerves between your brain and your gut. And there it is, 80% of your autonomic parasympathetic supply from your gut to your brain via that vagus nerve. It's telling you something. There's a hint there. That is a profound, profound finding. And it spawned off gut and psychology syndrome, but it isn't telling us anything that we don't already know. It's telling us that if you want to talk about the chemistry of your mind, what are you looking for Prozac for? Don't you find it interesting? I do. That IBS, Crohn's disease, and ulcerative colitis. Well, we've got somebody flying out here next week from some part of the country. In their 30s, ready to get their intestines cut out because of Crohn's. Failed IV antibiotics. All the person needs to learn to do is learn to eat. Learn to clean the palate. Learn to refine the enteric nervous system via the vagus nerve. So the messages that go from the vagus nerve in the gut to the brain are interpreted by the brain as it's okay down there, and the brain begins to celebrate. The brain begins to produce potentially more serotonin. Feed your brain. Let the inside of your ventricular system orgasm with joy each day because of what you feed into your body. There's a perspective on psychological health. There is a perspective rooted in what we've always known, that digestion is your first line of protection against a harsh world that can break your creative will. And there it is in the science, right there before you. That is fascinating. That is fascinating. And yet, what do we do with that? Look at that vagus nerve. Picture 27. Go to the vagus nerve. Hail the vagus nerve. Patency in your biliary system? How about patency in that nerve line? Is your vagus pumping? Gut psychology syndrome? Here's an upgrade to it. Look at the neurological side. Gut psychology syndrome, Natasha Campbell, where it fails? It fails when it fails. It fails because there's no coherence in the vagus nerve to transmit the joy of a rested, well-fed, well-assimilated, non-inflamed digestive tract back to the brain. There's no coordination via the vagus nerve. The vagus nerve is either structurally or psychologically deranged. Look at that vagus nerve, the electrical flow to it all. 714-850-1007. I'm going to do this for stem cells next Sunday. Give us a call if you're interested in that. If you're interested. Give us a call if you need to get your head put on straight because you're spinning as you try to approach your health concerns. So we can teach you here how to get your body to heal you. All the mechanisms are in there. Here's another one. Why are we programming pluripotent stem cells and injecting them when our body has them? Why are we doing Prozac? Here's the topper for me. Go to the bottom and look at that guy on YouTube. Look at that guy do his YouTube thing. Nolly, there it is. Ask yourself how you're going to get depressed. Ask yourself after what I've labored if this exercise might not make a difference to the inside of your brain. Look at him do what he's doing. Look at him whirling that belly and ask yourself if it wouldn't be worth the next 3 years of your life. Lose the weight and devote yourself to that. Join me next week. We'll come up with another insight from science to your living room. Look at him there. It's amazing. I'm Dr. Vincent Medici. We'll see you next Saturday. Bye-bye. Happy 4th.
You've been listening to Straight Talk on Health with Dr. Vincent Medici. Invite your family and friends to the show and learn about Dr. Medici through his website, straighttalk.cc. He'll give you the tools you need to save your health and prevent unnecessary surgeries and harmful drugs. He's dedicated to your ultimate healing. Join Dr. Medici next week at 10 a.m. for more Straight Talk on Health. This show and the information therein has not been evaluated by the FDA, and recommended products are not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. The information provided on this site is for informational purposes only and is not intended as a substitute for advice from your physician or other healthcare professional.